You had no more witnesses to call, and so Mr. Lindbergh, it's your opportunity to call witnesses at this time.
I'd like to call Kyle Benson.
Okay. Mr. Benson, would you please come up and take the stand? Just for the record, could you spell your name for us?
K-Y-L-E. Or say it, or what'd you say?
Spell, yeah. And is it Benson with an O at the end?
Yeah, B-E-N-S-O-N.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Benson, once again, in North Dakota, whenever someone testifies in an administrative hearing, one of the ALJ's responsibilities is to inform them of the penalties for perjury. Those penalties are up to $10,000 and up to 5 years in prison, and it is a Class C felony. Understanding those penalties, do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth here today?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to turn you over to Mr. Lindbergh, and he will have questions for you. When he's through, then, of course, Mr. Armstrong will have an opportunity, and we'll go through the cycle. Go ahead.
Kyle, how long have you worked for Excavating?
Since 2000, so 14 years.
Okay. In those 14 and a half years or so...
Mr. Lindbergh, could you check and make sure your microphone is on? Because I don't think we're picking you up.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
In your 14 years or so, what positions have you done or worked with in the company?
I started out as pipe layer and worked my way up to foreman through the years.
And that's...
From backfill to...
Okay.
Running the excavator.
So you've pretty much done everything that's involved in the water and sewer excavation plus other operations that the company has done.
Yes.
When we're excavating, or when Northern Excavating is excavating down a street and have to cross over a utility line, whether it's a gas line, power line, or phone line, is it fair to say that once we get within a reasonable distance of that utility line, that the excavator will first start with removing the pavement and maybe a few inches of gravel so that the laborers will, once that those two items are removed or one item, that the labor guys on the crew will hand dig 6 inches to 12 inches at a time over that 4 foot area, 2 feet on each side of the line. And if nothing's encountered, then the backhoe or excavator will dig out that, and we start the process over and over again, like till we find the utility?
Yes, that's the way we do it, or protocol, or they're supposed to do it.
And once the line is located, is there good, reasonable care from the excavator operator to the backfill crew that follows behind to watch out and take care of that utility to the best of their ability?
Yes, I guess that's the main thing. We don't want to hit nothing, but that's what they're taught to do.
And and maybe not every week, but at least every other week, throughout the course of construction season, do we have safety meetings regarding items of from trench safety to utility line crossings?
Yes, we do.
When once the utility line is located and uncovered and a new water main or sewer line is installed, the backfill operations take over from there. But the backfill, can they put in 8 feet of dirt at a time over the pipe, or do they have to put in 6 inches at a time?
No, you can't put in 8 feet at a time. And
is that because we have to meet minimum or compaction standards that's set forth in the plans and specs?
Yes.
So when a line is, a utility line is uncovered and then the backfilling operations begin, it could take a day or two for the backfilling guys. They're always a day or half a day behind the pipe laying operation, right?
Yes, most times.
So there's more than just uncovering the line and laying the pipe. You know, the utility line needs to be protected. It's through the second phase of which is the backfilling phase. And if during this backfilling phase, if there's groundwater encountered or sandy conditions, could this affect the utility line by walls possibly caving in?
Yes, it can.
Is water, when you encounter groundwater, does that have a big effect on walls collapsing and, you know, possibly causing a utility line to get severed?
The groundwater will definitely cause cave-ins in the trench.
Okay.
Which could take out cables, and it has before.
So on every excavation that you've been around, utility lines are hand excavated around every time. The company doesn't just go in there and just plow away and weather, you know, and just excavate without better reef. We just don't go in there and plow away and just rip through any utility lines.
No.
And the company, Northern Excavating, makes a good case of calling one call all the time, and then if we have questions, we recall them just to get something remarked if possible.
Yes, we call in all the time.
Up in Ross, where all this work was taking place with these utility breaks, was there a great amount of groundwater encountered on the west side of town, specifically along 3rd Street and Central Avenue?
Yes, there was a lot of groundwater there.
And throughout the entire project, we used a trench box to protect the workers from any possible cave-ins?
Yes.
A pipe was installed and we have to pull the trench box, could that cause, because of the groundwater and the sandy wet conditions, could that cause walls of the trench to collapse, thus possibly breaking the utility line?
Yes.
And when the wall collapses, there's almost an impossibility of trying to protect that line without possibly trying to hold it up with a backhoe or a rope or something. It's just the weight of the soil will actually really make that line break, right?
Yes, it can.
On the area in Ross along Central Avenue and 2nd Street West, the city of Ross hired us to repair a manhole as we were putting in the new water main, and we encountered several fiber optic drop lines going to houses on that street. We did encounter several?
Yeah, there was a couple, I remember.
And these lines that we encountered pretty much ran, they did not run parallel to the ditch, but they crisscrossed and had no real sense of direction. They just went the easiest route from their pedestal to their to the trailer house. So there was several spots where the utility line had 20 or 30 feet of line that was exposed that would be acceptable to possible breakage due to so much line exposed.
Yeah.
Okay. On the crew of for underground crew, we usually have approximately seven guys on a crew with two laborers that help with doing the pipe laying and the pipe bedding and any utility work for locating utilities. We do?
Yes.
Once the pipe laborers find a line, the backhoe will scrape a little bit at a time to work around it, the utility line?
Yes, that's...
But sometimes the backhoe operator is very dependent on the laborer, and there could be a possibility that the labor just wants to just doesn't get he wants to do as little as he can, and the excavator operator has to be very careful what he's doing there.
Yes, the hoe operator has to rely on the laborer there guiding him, and if he's not doing his job right or watching closely, stuff can happen.
But for the most part, I'll say 95-98% of the time that there's that percentage of effort that utilities are trying to be protected throughout from first locating it till the time we backfill it.
Yes.
The operator of the excavator that was in Ross for the mainline digging, do you know about how many years of experience he had on a excavator?
Well, he was in the service. I know he ran it some there, but otherwise I think he had a good 3-4 years of running it.
So he's familiar with the conditions that need to be encountered from all the projects that we've done over the years.
Yes, he should have had a good understanding.
I just want to make sure that the ground conditions in Ross encountered some real bad types of soil and wet soil, right?
Yeah, there was some really bad soil there.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Hey, thank you. Mr. Armstrong, do you have any questions?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Benson, you were the foreman for Northern Excavating on this job in Ross?
Yes.
What was the job?
What do you mean?
What were you building?
We were putting in water line replacement for the city.
How big a crew were you running?
Like it is, it varied, but 7 to 14 people, you know, depends on.
What equipment did you have on site?
Excavators, loaders, dozers, packers.
So you had laborers, correct?
Yeah, pipe layers, laborers.
Those laborers you were talking about, those are laborers are employees of Northern Excavating?
Yes.
You as the foreman were an employee of Northern Excavating?
Yep.
And who else do you have? The excavator operator?
Yeah.
And he was an employee, or she was an employee of Northern Excavating?
Yeah.
Anybody on site that was doing work for that job that was not an employee of Northern Excavating?
No.
Okay. Did you get to know Cassie Steele during the course of the job in Ross?
Yes.
You've been sitting here for the testimony this morning, is that correct?
Yep.
You heard the description of the seven incidents we're talking about in this case?
Yes.
I know Mr. Lindbergh asked you a lot about what possibly could have happened, but you were present when it happened, correct?
Yes.
Did all these lines break or be damaged in a single way, or were there different causes for them?
There was different little of everything.
If I were to show you the maps, could you tell us what caused the break in each location?
I couldn't tell you right. Not no more. It's been so long.
Okay. Well, what is your testimony about what caused the breaks then? What caused the damage? Not what possibly could have caused it. What caused it?
There was cave-ins.
Okay. What else?
Misguiding by the laborer.
Misguiding by the laborer.
To guiding the hoe operator.
Okay. So the laborer for Northern Excavating, misguiding the excavator operator for Northern Excavating. Right?
That, yes. That other one where the cable's S-ing out. I mean, they had no idea it was sticking out like that.
How far from the markings was it sticking out?
Past the 2 foot. You know, they got their paint line, they get 2 feet each way. Okay. It was definitely past that.
Is that the only one that your testimony is was past the markings?
Yeah, her markings were on. I'm not.
When you called her, did you tell her that the lines were broke from a track hole?
I'm sure some of them. I don't recall every conversation I had with her, but.
So after each of these breaks, you would call Cassie Steele, right, you personally?
Pretty much. Okay.
And you would tell her the line's broken, you need to come out here, right?
Yeah.
With respect to this job in Ross, you weren't scraping pavement off the top of the lines for this job, were you?
No, but
I want to show you a map real quick. It's previously been marked as Exhibit 15A.
Okay.
I've handed you Exhibit 15A, and there's a location on there with case number 882. Do you see that where I just pointed you?
Yep.
Is that, that's the location we've been talking about this morning with, I believe, what we've called the splice or the S in it. Is that correct?
Let's see here. Yeah. Yeah, along there by the church.
Do you know where, you know, kind of in that area, could you mark, if I were to ask you, could you mark on that map where that occurred?
Yeah.
You've got a blue marker. Could you mark it and just maybe write your initials underneath it, please? Mark that in blue and put KB underneath it.
Yep.
Did I see that?
And I gather it's your testimony that you don't know how far that splice went from the markings, just that it was more than 2 feet is your testimony.
Yes.
That's all the questions I have.
Ms. Jeff-Kotzak, do you have any questions?
I think Pat has a question, but since he hasn't told me what it is, I'm going to ask if he could ask it.
He may.
Thanks.
What is the typical construction? What is the construction practice when you have really bad soil? How do you keep your trenches open?
It's most of the time you have your trench box, and then you guys in there, and then you as you move on, you pull the box ahead, and if you can be around it with the other hole, that up there is so muddy and that we couldn't just put it back in the hole, you know, otherwise you'd get some dirt in the trench, so to try to protect some of them lines and stuff like that.
So as you're
around them a little.
As you're excavating forward, I guess, you don't have the trench box in every location. Is the trench caving in other places where you don't have the trench box?
Well, if you got the groundwater stuff. But as soon as you pull the box or whatever, I mean, wherever your box was sitting, the trench will fall behind it.
And if you have a utility, a buried facility there that you're trying to protect, and you know that when you pull the trench box it's going to cave, how would you protect that buried facility?
Like, is if you can get some, if you got some dirt or dry dirt, something you can get built up around it some to protect it.
And so were you using that practice at this on this project?
It was, there's some spots you can't get to it, you know, right then and there. But another hole without, it's impossible to get to sometimes, right at that, as you're moving on.
So how would you protect the utility in that situation?
I don't know exactly. Sometimes you can't.
In those situations, would you make a special effort to be in contact with the utility operator?
I suppose you should. I mean, you're hoping not anything's going to happen to it, you know.
And then while you were on the project, did you actually witness any of the, you know, in the locations where we have a cable damage, did you actually witness any of the trench cave-in and damaging the facilities?
No, I can't say that I was standing right there and seeing it fall on it and break it, but when I did get there, whatever, seeing it, I could definitely tell that's what happened.
How could you tell that's what happened then?
Just by the, you can see it, the wall caved in or whatever, where it caved in from and knocked it down.
The break, the location of the break and the cave in coincided. Is what you saw. Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a question, I guess, for Mr. Lindberg. You have two witnesses, you said?
Myself.
So you're the second. So there's no sense me asking some of these questions to Kyle, I think, then. Well, Kyle, thank you for coming here today. I'm sure you'd rather be anywhere else than here today. And you're not the one on trial here. Northern Excavating is. So you said that you've been employed with Northern Excavating since 2000. Who do you work for now?
Well, right now it's layoff season.
So are you employed by Northern Excavating? When was the last you were employed by Northern Excavating?
In November.
So are you getting paid to be here today at all?
No.
Okay. Is Northern Excavating still a company?
I believe so.
Okay. The just a couple follow-up. Let me back up. So to your knowledge, Northern Excavating is still a company. You've heard of nothing different than that?
Yeah. Mean it? Or?
I'm just asking what your knowledge is.
Yeah.
Okay. The Mr. Armstrong asked some questions, and I want to make sure I understood your answer. He asked the question about how the line were damaged, and I think your testimony was some of the lines were damaged by Traco. That's what I heard you say, but is that what you said?
My little bit of some of them were, yeah.
Okay, so how do you know that some of the lines were damaged by Traco?
Well, just because that's what happened, I guess. That's.
But did you witness the Traco damaging of the lines, or was it you got in the job site and they said, hey, Kyle, here's what happened. We're working and we hit him with the Traco.
Well, that or seeing it. I've been around it plenty. You know, I can definitely see that or tell what happened.
So you're saying that some of the damages were done by the Traco, and either you may have saw it yourself or you heard directly from someone. They weren't all caused by potentially cave-ins.
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever been involved in damaging facilities before, these cases, where you've been working and something's got damaged?
Yeah, stuff's been hit throughout. It happens every now and then.
Sure. Have you ever had this many damages happen in such a small area in such a small time?
No, the whole job was a nightmare.
Okay. Well, and that's kind of
a tough job.
That's kind of my lead into my next question is we do a lot of pipeline hearings at the commission, and when we ask the companies, we always say, if the conditions are such, will you suspend construction if it starts to rain or snow or it gets too cold? So if it was such a challenging weather situation, why didn't you suspend construction for the safety of the equipment and your workers?
Well, I guess I don't. But the groundwater had nothing really to do with it raining. We weren't working in the rain, but it was just a lot of the groundwater, once you get down to that 8 feet, just boiling in.
I'm just trying to reconcile that if the damages, we've got a lot of differing testimony in what's been filed, but if the cave-ins were because the weather was, the groundwater is such and the soil conditions such, why do you keep working in those areas doing it the same way when you've had one incident, two incidents, three incident. I mean, you'd think that at some point you'd stop and say, let's try something different.
You could suspend it for years. I mean, it's going to be that groundwater's there no matter what, unless you had a drought or something, you know.
Okay.
You just got to keep plugging along, I guess.
Do you believe Northern Excavating damaged all the facilities that are in discussion today? Whether it was willful or not, do you believe Northern Excavating caused the damages?
Yes.
Okay. And then just the last question, did you ever call 911 or anybody from Northern Excavating after RTC's facilities were hit?
I've never called 911, and I heard you talk about that earlier, but I guess I've never.
That's what the North Dakota law says in the one call book, that if you damage facilities, you're supposed to call 911 and let the facility know, so that's the only reason I brought it up.
Because they would have call, like, if you hit something, call one call. Otherwise, the place, you know, like
okay.
The telephone company, whatever you hit, call them.
But. And then the last question, have you ever participated in any of the one call training or any of the one call dinners that are around the state?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Kyle.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, do you have questions?
You can call me Commissioner Julie if you'd like. It's fine.
I need to practice.
All right. Okay, Kyle. I'm trying to understand just a little bit more thoroughly the process that I think it's your company uses for exposing the line. In your discussion with Mr. Lindbergh, I think he described scraping off either the cement or the gravel and then exposing dirt. And then tell me how you do it from there.
Well, then you shovel down, just depends on the ground. If it's really, really hard, you know, you pick away at it, you get down 6 inches or whatever in the back hole, come and scrape down to that level where you shoveled. We have probes you poke down into. Most of the time you'll see the trench line in the dirt, you know, it's different, so you know it's there. Then, yeah, you just go down 6 inches at a time or a foot.
Tell me how you use the track hoe in that process.
Well, the guys shovel down. So you got to mark, you know, from, say the phone line paint mark, and then two guys, one guy will shovel each side of the line down a foot or whatever, and then the back hole come up there. And this is where the guy up there guiding them needs to be watching, but he'll bring them down to where the level they shoveled down to, and then he'll pull it across, scrape it down or whatever to that.
Then they have a new flat area of dirt to shovel down further.
Yeah.
So the track hoe is just used to scrape off what they were shoveling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Till they find it, you know, and then they're supposed to work them around it.
Is that pretty common? Is that standard procedure for exposing these lines, using the track hoe in that, or do you ever just avoid the track hoe altogether and just shovel?
No, because if it fits down, let's say, 2 feet, their lines all vary, too, from 6 inches under the dirt to 4, 5, 6 feet sometimes, so you can't shovel all that.
Why not?
It would take you all day or a week or whatever if you had to try and shovel down.
Okay. So it's mostly for time?
Yeah.
All right. Did you, in working on this job, you said it was a nightmare. What other, after the first strike, what did you guys talk about to try to avoid that reoccurring and to try to improve your practices so you didn't have any additional strikes?
Well, just have meetings, tell the guys to watch better or whatever, step it up. But
you didn't explore any other tools or procedures?
No.
Okay. Do your, how often do your crews receive training on these, on excavating to expose underground infrastructure?
Well, we just have meetings, I guess, and I guess it's more or less on-the-job training, you know.
Okay. Before folks are hired, do you know whether they are able to do this type of work or not, or do they just start working?
Just start working, but it's never just some new guy throw it out there and expect to, you know, guide them around anything like that or anything, you know.
Okay. Was this an experienced crew?
Half and half, I guess.
All right. Now, in trying to rectify some of the discrepancies in what you've said and what Ms. Steele said, she said in all the cases it was clearly damaged by the track hoe bucket, and that you called and told her that it was caused by a track hoe bucket. Do you disagree with that?
Yes, I disagree. It wasn't every time that I would have said that.
Okay. Do you have any records of what caused the damage in each of these circumstances?
I didn't keep no records, no.
Okay. She also said that she never viewed or saw any evidence of cave-ins around the excavation site. Do you disagree with that?
I disagree with that.
But you don't have any sense for how many were caused by cave-in?
Not. No, I don't.
All right. And then finally, have you ever been trained in or read the specific one call requirements like that handbook or the requirements that are spelled out in law for excavators?
No, I guess I haven't.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you. Commissioner Chrisman, do you have any questions?
I do, Your Honor. And first of all, thanks for being here, Kyle. I spent two summers and part of a third as one of the pipe layers in the ditch, and I'm kind of jealous because I never got the call to come be a foreman. So commend you. Do you have a copy of Exhibit 15? Or if someone could hand you one.
15A will be okay, won't it?
That would actually be better. I just wanted to, on the record, confirm. If you look way on the left side, in the original box, or not, in the original circle for case number 13-879, it had that black circle, and it was west of 3rd Street, but near Central Avenue. And Cassie adjusted that and said it was actually more up by Railroad Avenue. Do you have any conflict with that, or do you agree with that change?
No, I think it should be more to the north or whatever.
Up there by Railroad Avenue as she changed it. Okay. And then did you marked where you thought the case 882 occurred?
Yeah, he did. Would you like to see it?
I would, please. How far apart in distance would you say cases 882 and 883 occurred? Those were the two that happened on October 1st on the same day. One was at S, and then there was another one just east of it.
He doesn't have a map right now, so.
Oh.
And you're asking what, how? How far apart they were from each other, you're saying?
Yeah, were they 10 feet or 300 feet or just an estimate?
I guess I'm not even sure, like, on that second one.
Okay.
I don't recall that one, you know.
Okay. And so lastly then, these seven cuts occurred, I believe, if I wrote down the dates right, from August 2nd to October 1st, but really over about a 60-day period. And you said that there's safety meetings every 1 or 2 weeks. Besides telling everybody to be careful or be cautious, was it ever discussed that this is a serious deal, that when we break these, you know, it's going to cost the company money, we're probably going to have to pay the cost of fixing it, there could be penalties. Was that kind of message sent from the company to you and from you to the rest of the crew, that there are serious implications? It's not just a matter of we cut something?
Yes. And the whole operator, he knew that too. And he's telling the guys that they're guiding them and everything, you know.
Yeah. All right. I have no other questions. Thank you, though.
Thank you. Let's see. Mr. Lindberg, do you have any questions for Mr. Benson again?
One question. Commissioner Kalk mentioned about if we would have suspended operations because of weather conditions or ground conditions. we had a really tight time frame to complete this job, right?
Yes.
And we did not meet that timetable, did we?
No.
And the weather
we didn't work when it rained.
No, we didn't.
The water problems were directly from groundwater issues, not rain issues, correct?
Yes.
In pulling a trench box from one spot to the other as you're moving down the street, the lined utility lines are protected to the best of we can by either placing dry dirt around them or the existing dirt that we have in order to minimize any problem that could occur, correct?
Yes.
That's all I have.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Armstrong, any questions for Mr. Benson?
Nothing more.
Ms. Jeff Kosako?
Nothing more.
Commissioner Call.
I have to follow up to the follow-up. So in your discussion with leadership in Northern Excavating, did you get the sense that the time frame to construction had priority over safety?
No.
Was time a factor in your decision process?
No. It's you can do what you can do in a day, and that's how I looked at it, you know.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchik.
Just one more question. I meant to ask you this the last time, but if you were to do this job today, would you go back and do things differently?
Yes.
In what way?
I don't know. We'd have a better find dry dirt and stuff like that first to pack around, stuff like that. And
so is it safe to say you think that there are things that you could have done to minimize the damages or avoid them entirely?
Yeah, in some cases.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner,
questions?
Mr. Lindbergh, one last chance. Anything
no, I'm
else?
Done.
All right, then, we'll be done.
15A.
Thank you. You can step down. Thank you very much, Mr. Benson. I understand how nerve-wracking that can be.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Lindbergh, did you wish to testify as well?
Yes.
Okay. And is it the commission's practice for him to take the witness stand then, too? All right. Yes. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mr. Lindbergh, in North Dakota, as you've heard many times before already today, one of my responsibilities is to inform individuals that the penalties for perjury are up to $10,000 in fines and up to 5 years in prison, and it is a Class C felony. Understanding those penalties, do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth here today?
Yes.
Okay. And I will let you just tell us what you need to tell us. I won't require you to ask yourself questions.
Can I reiterate? I mean, just a general scenario?
Yep, just tell
without,
us what...
Okay.
Well,
asking a question?
Yes, without asking a question, okay. But just understand that what you generally would do isn't really relevant. It's what happened in this case that really is going to help the commission make its determination.
Just to begin with... I founded Northern Excavating about 32 years ago. In 1984, we started. And I'd worked for a previous contractor for a couple years. I obtained a construction engineering degree from NDSU in 1980. And like I said, I worked for Interstate Engineering for a couple years, and then worked for a contractor for a couple years, and then an opportunity came along and bought out a small contractor and then started doing what we're doing. And then basically about 1988 or 89, we got more into more commercial work and then have proceeded to do work throughout the state of North Dakota, doing water and sewer work, site work, gravel hauling, and things like that. So, we had bid this project in Ross, and it's nothing out of the abnormal that we've done, in the past. This past summer, we did 34 blocks of water main replacement in the city of Carrington, didn't hit a utility line. So we had a subcontractor that was helping us, and they hit a 4-inch MDU line, but we didn't hit nothing. We did another water and sewer job in Jamestown this fall, and we nicked an MDU line there, but it was 40 inches, from where it was supposed to be. But the nobody was affected because the pipe ended 5 feet from where we hit it. So that's kind of a, you hate to do it, but it just, things like that happen. But, we try to train our people as best as we can. I'm not in the field as much as I'd like to because of all the administrative work that goes on with trying to run a business. And so you hope the people that are running the job are doing the best they can. And I think, as everybody knows, labor is a big issue in the state of North Dakota, just with the way things are expanding. And so we try to have more people on the job than what we actually need, because the work ethic nowadays is not good. And I don't know where it's going to go in the future, but it's very bad. And, and all contractors or even retailers are having the problems of, finding enough help and everything. So, but with the people that we have, we try to train them to the best we can in trench safety, working around utilities, just whatever the job entails, we try to get them to do the best that they can. And if they have any questions, we're open to any suggestions. Mr. Kalk mentioned about when we're working in Ross, if we would have suspended operations on this project, but like Kyle mentioned, we were under a deadline, and we went past that deadline, and we had liquidated damages assessed, but we still continued on in as safe a manner as we can. But the engineer in the city would not, they would have probably had us default on the contract if we would have suspended operations based on that, because they didn't give us any rain days. And like I had asked Ms. Steele earlier, is from when we started the last week of July of 13 till the snow flew in November, we had 19 inches of rain in Ross. It was unbelievable. And we've got verification on the weather reports on that. And so, we lost a lot of work days. And when you get rain, that affects the groundwater conditions. And that's what caused a lot of the cave-ins. And, like I said, when cave-ins occurred on these utility lines, it might not have been the dirt that broke the line, but it was the backhoe. There's a backhoe that is in the front of the excavation process, excavating for the line. And then there's another backhoe that's completing the backfill operations. And I've seen it happen several times. If you got bad soil conditions, which it was real sandy there, and the groundwater was down about 8 feet, and our excavation went down to 9 feet. So you got a foot of water that we're dealing with, pumping it out, but then the water will come back in. And when water inundates a trench, it weakens a sidewall, so you'll get a caving action in. It could be just a few feet. It could be 30 feet long. It's whatever's, exposed and vulnerable to, that type of action happening. And when that second backhoe is sitting up on your spoil pile, he's reaching around trying to find dry dirt to put in the excavation that, and around the utility line. And if he feels, a lot of times that wall will give out a little bit, so that backhoe could slip down a little bit. So he's swinging around, and he could put that bucket down, and lo and behold, what did he just do? He went through the utility line with the bucket.
you know, but he came from the top down on it. Or he, you know, maybe he got down and it jerked around and the bucket came up and then it hit it. I mean, it's a, you know, a number of things that could have happened, but it was totally unintentional, but it was because of the conditions encountered there. And dewatering on a project like this, we dewatered, you know, because we have to lay our pipe in a dry trench, so we're pumping water all the time. And but then when the backfilling operation is 3-4 times slower than the pipe excavation because you can only put in 6 inches at a time. And when you're down 6 inches at a time, you know, you're prone to what the walls are that are standing beside you. And, you know, you can't have a block long of trench boxes. You know, it's just not how it works. So when you lay your pipe, you lay your pipe on a bed of sand, put a little bit of 3-4 inches of sand over the top of the pipe, and then you'll reach, the excavator operator will reach around, grab some dry dirt, put, you know, about 2 feet of pipe or 2 feet of dirt over the top of that pipe for, you know, and it's usually 20 feet long because that's how long a stick is. But you still got groundwater that's in the ditch there, and then that could cause a problem to occur, like what I explained before. So it's, you know, that's what's tried to, you know, at least you have your pipe bedded and stabilized and everything, and then you complete your backfilling operations. In the engineer, we had to hire an independent testing lab to come in and do compaction tests because you can't put in a foot at a time. You can't put in 2 feet at a time. That's when I was asking the representative from RTC about when they do their utility work, if they backfilled in one lift, which normally that's what utility companies do, but they don't have an engineer standing over above them, you know, dictating this is what you have to do. And it's spelled out in the specs that you have to do that. So, you know, we have to have, you know, certain compaction standards, and it's usually 98% of a modified Proctor, which, you know, it's very difficult to get because you got to dry the dirt, you know, by hauling it off a site, disking it with a dozer or a tractor, and then hauling it back on. Like I said, we did 34 blocks in Carrington this last year, and 34 blocks got hauled out, and we backfilled the trenches, and we basically just put the dirt in, lightly tamped it, and then kept going because if we in April, well, May and June, it was so wet that you couldn't dry dirt. You know, I mean, you could dry dirt for one day, and the next day it rained a half an inch, and it was all forgotten. So, and we had such a tight deadline on that project that once you, we just made a decision, we got to get pipe in the ground, get it covered up, and we'll deal with it coming back, and we'll dig out 5 feet, haul that dirt off, dry it, and then bring it in and compact. And that's what we did. And that's kind of what we did up in Ross because we ran into a lot of several blocks were unstable dirt, so we hauled that dirt off, hauled in dry dirt, but you can only put in 6-8 inches at a time. So that trench stays open a lot, and it's, you know, and it becomes unstable. So, but you know, it takes a lot of people to do all that. So, but Mr. Koch mentioned about Kyle being employed. Kyle's, you know, still part of the company, but we had a board of directors meeting in December, and we have canceled our business operations as of December 18th. So we're, you know, we're not in, we're just closing out our company business, and it's a retirement basically. So, and that's, we finished all our contracts up, and that's what we're doing. So, and it's just several reasons, you know, reasons of this, reasons of trying to find qualified people. And, you know, the work environment is just tough. So when I go, while I've still got my health, I want to, you know, I've got two boys. It's real difficult.
Take your time, mister. Take a break if you need it.
But I wouldn't put them through this. It's my youngest son, he's a construction engineer. He works for he works for Gowan Construction out of East Grand Forks, and he would love to do this business. But with issues like this and the underground, you know, business with the rules and regulations that they have is I'm not going to put him through it. And he, you know, and he doesn't want to do it. And he's got a very good job with them. He's their GPS coordinator, and he loves it. And it's just not fair. So that's between my wife and I. We just said this. We got to get out. You know, we got all our bills paid for, and that's we got to get out while we keep our health. So it's very tough after over 30 years, and so that's, you know, I just had to get that out there. So.
Is there anything else you want to talk about the job at Ross about before I?
No, it was a, you know, a very tough job because of the ground conditions, we had, you know, qualified people there, but you know, part of it too is, you know, you have to have people that take pride in their work, that have some responsibility is my biggest word that I try to use nowadays. People don't want to take any responsibility, and by doing that, they have to accept responsibility of what it takes to do a job, and you know. But that's just a big issue with nowadays. So, but it was a tough job. We got it done, and we moved on, and you know, we've completed other jobs since. And the biggest thing is we've, you know, got all our work done, and you know, we were going to try to stay active. In the gravel business, but it's just got to a point where, you know, I mean, we have a lot of equipment and, you know, how much do you keep and how much do you not keep and everything. So we just gotta do this. So.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Mr. Armstrong, do you have any questions for yes. Mr. Lindbergh?
Mr. Lindbergh, were you on site at any of the times when these seven breaks that we're dealing with this morning occurred?
I was on site for when the line was broke on 2nd Street West and north of Central Avenue. When I asked Ms. Steele about that, there was a possibility of 30 feet of line exposed. And these utility lines that we encountered a lot of times in Ross, when I asked the other gentleman on who engineers their routes. When we do a project, we have, you know, the consulting engineer, civil engineer.
Well, if Mr. Lindbergh, you know, if you could, you'll have a chance to go again. If you could just answer my questions now, that'd be
good. Yes, so I was on site.
You were on site for one of the breaks.
Right.
One of the incidents.
And then I was, I didn't see it, but I was there where the S thing was hit.
You were there where the S one was in the, the one, as far as I can tell, case number 880 and case number 882, then, is that
yes.
correct? Okay. The other ones, you weren't present at all?
No, I was told that day of them.
Okay. What were you doing on site for the break on 2nd Street West and Central Avenue?
I came up periodically for to check the progress of the job, and then also we had weekly meetings on... you know, for progress meetings.
And you would agree with me that the line at that site was broke as a result of Northern's excavation, right? Whether you agree with me that you did anything wrong, it happened as a result of the excavation
yes.
you guys were conducting, correct?
Yes.
And that would be the same for the other one, 883, that you were, or 882 that you were present for, right?
Yeah, we exposed it.
Are you the person who bids jobs for Northern?
Yes.
And was the city of Ross a public bid job?
Yes.
And were you the only company that bid it?
No, there was four bids, I believe.
Did you do anything to check the soil conditions before you placed your bid?
Yes, we check out things.
Isn't the factor of addressing soil conditions something that you normally work into a bid so that you don't... so that you can take the time and have the payment to prevent trench cave-ins and things of that nature?
You do the best you can by the use of trench boxes, things like that, or shoring, or dewatering.
And when you don't, the trench can cave in and break lines, right?
Can cave in even if there isn't water there.
Sure.
It's up to the type of soil, but we probably encountered 6 different types of soil in Ross.
Is it your testimony that all of these damaged facilities are the result of trench cave-ins?
I prepared the letter that had the explanation, and I may have worded, you know, not all were trench excavations or trench collapses.
But they were. You are aware they were all the result of Northern Excavating's excavation in those particular areas, right?
Yes.
You received the invoices from RTC when they sent them, Northern Excavating did?
Our office manager has.
Did you contact RTC and discuss those invoices with RTC at all?
No.
That's all the questions I have.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Jeff Kosako, any questions?
We don't have any questions now. Thank you.
Commissioner Gall?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Lindbergh, for your testimony. It's always interesting. You know, nobody wants to have these kind of proceedings, but when things get damaged, we've got to sort through them, and I certainly appreciate your position. I just hope you appreciate the position that we're in with mm-hmm. all these competing forces that we're trying to work through. So just to have a couple, I guess, questions. That, you know, I didn't just throw that out in the blue about your company, that you emailed our attorney and let us know that your company had decided to break apart through a board of directors meeting, and that the now that email on that it is in the record, correct?
I believe.
I see it's docketed, but I want to see if it's in the record.
It's only in the docket. It's not in evidence.
It's not an exhibit.
So, Alana, can you get that in evidence next time around?
Yes. Well, we'll just give it a number now, and I'll get a copy. Okay. But there's also testimony to the same effect.
It will be Exhibit 19.
Okay.
I guess, Mr. Lindbergh, I'm just trying to find a path forward here because it's an interesting scenario. We've got one decision about the violations that may or, you know, you admitted that your company did it. Whether you was care imprudent, that's something we have to decide. But from your viewpoint, how does the commission go forward? If the commission deems zero, then that's easy. Zero is such the case. Mm-hmm. But if the commission deems that you should be fined $1, how do you pay that $1? Since your company is no longer exists?
I would have to have our attorney answer that.
Okay, so that's, I guess, the next question is so should the commission be addressing our correspondence, your email, for my colleagues probably have already read it, but for those that didn't, it just to summarize, you talk about through a board of directors meeting December 18th, you decided to cease the company. All business has been terminated upon operations. A copy of the decision by the board of directors is available. Your attorney is Maurice McCormick of Vogel Law Firm in Fargo. Will be handling any issues that may arise. So does that mean that after today or that we should be talking to Vogel Law Firm instead of you?
I don't know the answer to that question. He is aware of the situation.
So, but to reiterate what I think I heard is you said that if the commission fines you $1, that we should send that to Vogel Law Firm?
I'd say, you know, I'd have to confer with him on what the proper protocol would be.
Okay. Who is on the board of directors for Northern Excavating?
Me and my wife.
Okay. So it's a family company, family decision. Fair enough.
Yes.
I guess we'll sort through that part when we get to the right. Legal part for us. And anything that you would have to clarify that question, I'll have to ask our general counsel when she steps back. You already answered the questions. I'm just going on my list here about the job site. Are you aware of your company calling 911 as according to what's supposed to happen in one call when the facilities were hit?
I never heard of that. You
okay.
know, well, that's when I've been involved, because I was involved with the MDU line cut in October in Jamestown. and we called them to you.
Well, that's one thing we'll always keep working on the training side, but it's very clear that when you hit a facility that you contact 911 and you let the facility know. I mean, we've had natural gas incidents where people get killed, and anyway, that's a separate issue. I just wanted to see if there was somewhere inside of that the company may have called. We talked about bidding the contract. I think that was already on the record. The question I would like to follow up on is that, you know, things happen out there. I get that. But why didn't you try to work something out with RTC on this that they've, for most part, the people seem to be reasonable on the facilities and they get damaged? I'm just curious why you chose to not engage with them about trying to figure something out, given the complexity of the job.
Just had so many issues going on with getting the job done at one step at a time.
Well, that, I mean, there's several issues here. There's this issue with the commission, but there's still the issue that the, I'm not here to preach, I guess, but there's several issues that will have to be worked out at some point in time. The okay. What would you think, or give me your response to when your own witness gave testimony that conflicted with what you filed. Your response for all seven cases was, Northern claims the line had been hand exposed and protected, which contradicts what the testimony I heard, but was damaged when the trench excavation caved as a result of inundation with water and poor soil conditions. So your response for all seven cases was that. Your witness testified that some, not an exact number, was damaged by the Traco. How would the commission reconcile those two statements when they're both from the same company that contradict each other?
I guess when I prepared the letter saying they're all inundated with water, that our office manager, when she printed it up, was a misprint, whether she misunderstood and just didn't, you know. I do agree that some may have been damaged by the backhoe, especially the S-turn. That was the one four-optic, the four-line drop north on 2nd Street West. There was 30 feet exposed there, and during the backfilling operations, there was so much exposed there that you could drop a basketball on that line and it broke. And whether,
but you're saying that you had, as the manager or the owner, you do admit that your company, maybe not you, did damage some of the lines of the Traco. Do you agree with what your witness testified?
Yes.
Okay, so then let's just get right to my final thought, I guess, is that our advocacy staff has recommended $17,000 in all these fines, and we have to decide that. But it seems to me that I'm asking you what you think is reasonable. You've admitted to me that you have some culpability here. My goal here is never to personally to pile on to anything, but there's responsibility here. What would you think would be fair as we deliberate?
You know, I don't know. I just the ground conditions and the job conditions just dictated everything there that, you know, when you're digging in the ground, you have a different scenario every inch of the way, you know, and we did, 17,000 feet up there and plus service lines that we ran to each and every house and trailer and business and everything. And whether it's one hit or 10 hits or whatever, you don't want any of them. But there's just, you know, they're beyond the control of our operations. Yes, we the operations caused it, but it was beyond our legitimate control of what happened like that. So
you're admitting in our previous discussion that the Traco damaged some of it. It had nothing to do with inundation the Traco did, but you're still hanging tight. I'm just trying to find a... So you're saying that you think it should still be zero?
Of course.
On the master director.
Yes, because, yeah. Yes, I do.
Because there's a lot of testimony that conflicts back and forth. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I guess I don't really...
The one that the Traco hit was on the S loop, and that was, you know, no doubt, you know, nobody was new. Yeah, the Traco did hit it, you know, but... It was not marked. You know, they should have been There should have been as-built there, that there was a splice there that they would have, you know, we had it uncovered, and then when he goes to widen the trench out, all of a sudden, you know, there it is looping back around, and, you know, that's not the proper protocol.
I don't want to beat this dead horse any farther, but just a little bit more. Whose responsibility is it to do the excavation correctly?
We did everything correctly. It's just, how do you know what's buried, you know, how do you know what's underneath the floor here? You don't.
You know, that's so the purpose of your own witness testified that they would take too much time to hand dig it or...
No, it's not too much time. It's they take the time, but they can't, you don't know what's 2 inches away or 20 feet away. They uncover the line, it's there, but they don't know it loops back around. You know, they don't know that it's there.
Right. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner Fedorich.
Okay, just a few questions, Mr. Lindberg. And first of all, thanks for being a business owner and manager for 30 years in North Dakota. You've obviously done a lot of work and employed a lot of people over these years, and so appreciate that. have you read the actual law on this matter to read specifically what's required by law?
No, just hope we know the general rules. Okay. But since, you know, with based on experience, mm-hmm. of what we've done in the past, and try not to dictate anything different, but it's getting to be so complicated nowadays that it's, you know, I hate to say it, it's gonna force other people to do what we're doing.
Yeah,
you know, well, not an excuse, but that's just what's gonna happen.
There, the law is pretty specific, and there isn't a lot of wiggle room in how things are spelled out in here for whose responsibility is. When you read through the precautions to avoid damage that the excavator is to follow, there really is no discussion at all about whether something is struck unintentionally, about, you know, conditions that, you know, under certain conditions you're not required to, you know, take the careful and prudent and expose the line, et cetera. There's no discussion about, you know, what requirements or specs you have for backfilling under the contract. It's not conditioned at all. You're supposed to maintain a clearance between the underground facility and the cutting edge or point of any mechanized equipment, considering the known limit of control of the cutting edge to avoid damage to the facility. So whether it's on the excavation or the backfilling or, you know, driving on the embankment, that's what you're required to do.
I think we've tried to, when we encounter conditions like that, to the best of the ability of the operator and crew, they try to, there'll be a person that when they're backfilling and there'll be a guy over hanging on to the utility line to protect it, you know, so when they're backfilling around it, and then he'll take a, you know, a bucket of dirt, and he'll put it on each side of the till line, and he'll lightly tamp it with the backhoe bucket because he can't get, you know, a packer down there right away. Or we'll take a, you know, if it's in drier conditions, they'll take a jumping jack compactor and pack on each side of it, you know, because otherwise if you don't pack underneath the lines and when you backfill over the top of it, it could be 2 days later or 2 years later where, you know, the dirt settles underneath it and all of a sudden, boop, it pops the line. You know, and you don't want that. So you got to take the precautions. And in the precautions of backfilling from whatever conditions they are, wet, dry, or whatever, the precautions were taken, but it's just unforeseen, not so much unforeseen, but just the conditions happened that caused for a line to break.
Mm-hmm. So... when it comes to determining, well, who's to pay for the damages, you'll have to settle that with the company. It says clearly in law that the excavator is responsible for paying the damages caused for repairs. So, but in terms of a fine, you've mentioned that you don't think this is fair. So help me understand what you're struggling with in terms of the fairness of this.
I just think it's government intervention when we've taken the precaution to
help, you know, to do the job and keep the lines protected the best we can, and then you get, you know, slammed with this.
So if there was, say, one of your operators was driving under the same conditions and struck a gas line or an electric line, and there was a big accident where they were killed, would that be then it was just too bad, it was the conditions?
No, I think, you know, there's circumstances where if you don't call one call and you just blow by and dig and rip through whatever, you know. We didn't rip through anything. We hand dug around every utility there, but, you know, the ones that, like the S1, I mean, we went, exposed it, but then 3-4 feet past that, there was a big S in it that the utility company didn't know it was there. Nobody knew it was there.
Right.
So it was unfortunate. But we made the calls to one call. We uncovered everything. We tried to protect everything. We did everything we can, but the conditions just happened. So I feel that, you know, it's, you know, not, it's, you know, the government doesn't need to get involved on that because of what was encountered.
What we do here is also sets precedent for other cases like this, and we're having issues with this all over the state. So while there, no one was hurt or injured in this case, we might not be as lucky the next time. And so, you know, we have to balance that with your challenges with the conditions there, et cetera. So I understand what you're saying, but there isn't a lot of wiggle room in the law and what's required by the excavators.
Where has this been for 30 years? I mean, we've hit other lines where, you know, never even heard of this until it came up here this past December, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know when.
I mean,
it was.
It's gonna drive small business right out of existence, whether it's in North Dakota or other states. You know, you'll get the companies coming from Minneapolis that have 500 employees doing their work in North Dakota. Oh, they're already doing it, you know. And there's several excavating businesses that have ceased operations. Titus Excavating here in Bismarck quit because of things like this. That was 2 or 3 years ago, and it's just going to continue.
Well, I understand what you're saying, especially in terms of employment issues, but the law is law, and small and large companies have to follow it. So that's all my questions.
I feel we followed them to the letter to the best that we could.
Commissioner Chrisman, do you have any questions?
I do, Your Honor. That these occurrences are from August 1st, I think, to August 2nd to October 1st. Is that about when you started working up there, or had you been working in Ross throughout
the summer?
We started
around the third week of July.
Okay, and then finished up in October?
No, we finished August of 2014.
Oh, okay. You mentioned your job in Carrington, this was one crew?
And we had about a crew and a half to two crews in Ross, you know, working there. Then we had another crew working in Carrington, sometimes two crews.
Okay. So you have 3-4 crews working within the
company? It's 2 to 2.5 crews, okay. Basically.
And did these are your first violations?
Of this type ever, yes. We've hit utility lines before, but, you know, just either they were, you know, most of the time, you know, they're mismarked, but there has been times where you have hit a line that, but most of the time they are been mismarked, and we've had to do what we've had to do for whether they're a chargeable one or not. But
and in those instances when you hit one that wasn't way mismarked, if your guys made a mistake, have you paid the
yes.
Owner of the facility
yes.
for their damages?
Yep. But it's been very rare that we've had to pay one. So, but, you know, we've turned it into insurance or whatever. If, you know, we turn it in if it's, we feel if it's, you know, justified. And then, you know, then we'll have some correspondence back and forth.
Okay. Earlier on, It seemed like there was dispute. I mean, I understand that you dispute the whole thing, but specifically over the length of the bore,
yes.
Whether it was 500 feet or something less.
Yes.
Did you see the marks on the exhibit that Ms. Steele put on there?
Well, I did. I can take a look at it again. But the bore hasn't been done. But we've been billed.
Are you aware from your time on the job, does it seem like that where she marked is where the pedestals or whatever the correct terminology is of where they would link their facilities if they were to bore that?
I know there's a pedestal on Central Avenue and 2nd Street Southwest, Southwest, that is off the intersection. And the pedestal over on 3rd Street, I'm not exactly sure where that is, because the where they show these utility lines as marked in yellow and blue, they're not even close to where, you know, where they were when we encountered them. They're right in the roadway, specifically along Central Avenue. I mean, it shows them being basically in the ditch all the way along the road where there is a ditch, and that ditch has 4 feet of water in it for the west 3 blocks of it.
Okay.
So I can't say where the pedestals are, but and that distance is way under, should be under 500 feet. At the most, it would be between 300 and 400, because a block is 300 feet, basically center to center.
Well, on that point, and that block that's between 2nd Street West and 3rd Street West?
Yep.
Kind of in the middle, but up toward the north end of the block. Are those, like, tractor trailer semis parked there?
Yeah, somebody's.
That gives us some perspective of how large that block is, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have anything else you want to add, Mr. Lindbergh?
No, I'd like to say I'm sorry for what has taken place. It shouldn't have to go this far, but we tried to make the best reasonable effort to protect these utilities, but circumstances of what was encountered kind of dictated the whole thing. So,
all right. Mr. Armstrong, any questions?
Just one follow-up on Commissioner Kalk's questions. You said the company has resolved to close business as of December, 18th of last year.
Yes.
The assets of the company, you said all the debts were paid. The assets were distributed to who?
No, nothing's been distributed yet. That's going to take 6 months or 4 to 6 months.
Expect them to be distributed to you and your wife?
Yes.
That's all the questions I have.
Ms. Jeff Kotsako.
I don't have any questions.
Commissioner Kalk?
No, ma'am.
Commissioner Fedorchik? Nope. Commissioner Kalk. All right. You can step down, please. Thank you.
Where does this go to?
You can just leave it there.
Pass it down.
Okay. I've got the originals here.
Okay. Here's the email, too. 19. Okay. Do you have any other witnesses you wish to call, Mr. Lindbergh? Mr. Armstrong, do you have other witnesses?
No rebuttal.
At this time, do you wish to do closing arguments?
Briefly.
Oh, please go ahead.
Just in general, I think the evidence shows that the lines were damaged either by our contention is they were damaged by track hose hitting them. The fact of the matter is, under the law, it doesn't matter if it was the track hose hitting them or the trench cave-ins. Section 49-2305, Subsection 2 and or subsection 6 would apply to anything that could deal with a trench cave-in. It's the operator's responsibility to make sure that enough that the trenches are managed in a way that it doesn't damage underground facilities. So that itself is Northern's responsibility. With respect to the S-curve case, I think the evidence shows that the line was properly marked. I don't think there's any strong evidence that the curve or splice, if you will, was outside the 2-foot requirement by the law from the marking. I think the only evidence of that was Mr. Benson's testimony, and he said he's not sure how far it was, but he knows it was more than 2 feet. Ms. Steele did testify it was within the 2 feet mark of the line. I think the violations have been established. We've got 7 cases here, and as far as I can maybe summarize the testimony, maybe in a relevant way, my understanding of the respondent's position is, look, we had to meet our terms of the contract with the city, so we couldn't meet the terms of the one-call law. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's the excavator's responsibility to make sure these underground facilities are not damaged and to take prudent care in doing that, and that wasn't done in these cases, and we would ask that the commission impose an appropriate penalty for these violations, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lindbergh, do you have a closing argument you wish to make?
I'd just like to say that with the line cuts that were done, they were done beyond our control. We made every effort we could to protect them, but the circumstances were beyond Northern Excavating's control, especially with the S cable that was not marked properly, and we had that uncovered and exposed and protected, but nobody knew what was encountered after when the S was had been spliced previously, and with all the other cuts, the one with the 4-drop on 2nd Street West, when that line was installed, it wasn't installed to the proper methods and means, and we protected the best we can, but we couldn't do any more than what we absolutely did. So we protected as much as we possibly could to the best of anybody's ability.
Thank you. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, you get closing argument? No. All right. Is there anything else we need to do before we close the hearing? Do the commissioners have any questions or comments they wish to make?
No, ma'am.
All right, then. It's 2:28. Let's close the hearing at this time. Thank you, everyone.